Annyeonghaseyo, Sangeeta, Poonam, and Meenal are back with another episode of Crash Landed on K-Dramas. Today we have with us Abigail, who we know as Abby, and Chaitra. Abby is from UK and Chaitra is a teenager in India. Abby and Chaitra both had not watched K-Dramas before they heard our podcast. And Abby gave me this idea, why don't you get a few people who've never watched K-Dramas to watch them and get them on board to discuss their experience. So that's what we are going to do today. So first question to both of you is, what kind of TV viewing do you like? What genres? And what has been your experience watching your first K-drama and comparing it with the shows that you watched?
So for me, I have a very eclectic viewing genres. So I like anything really, except maybe horror. I'll kind of dip in and out of horror. But I absolutely love musicals. I used to watch Bollywood movies as a child because they put them on very early in the morning in the UK TV. Most of the time at the moment, I'm watching UK dramas and sitcoms, European things. So sometimes, you know, in different languages with subtitles, etc.
How about you, Chaitra?
I love anything that's not horror. I love love. So rom-coms are always a go-to. And period dramas. And my constant rewatches of Downton Abbey are a testament to how much I really love period dramas. And obviously sitcoms. I adore sitcoms from the bottom of my heart. And yeah, like I said, like, but romance is my favorite genre, definitely.
I totally agree with both of them that even I don't enjoy watching horror. And it's a genre I definitely tend to skip. And K-dramas, I think they do horror also in a very dramatic way. So I think that's the Korean ones are the only kind of horror I've watched so far. English horror, I've watched a couple of movies as a kid, but I don't think I've really enjoyed or seek out horror movies or anything.
Yeah. And there's I think what the Korean dramas do well and what I've seen from Korean dramas and movies like Parasite, I think is a great example of this, is the thriller genre. And there's a very different vibe for me. You know, there's tension building and, you know, it's kind of Hitchcock-esque in the way that they do things
true.
And present the characters and the story arcs go. But once it tips into that horror side of things, it almost becomes a bit too kind of, in the UK we'd say hammy, where it sort of feels almost a bit too artificial and you can't really get engaged with the story.
Yeah, I know Meenal said that you guys started watching K-dramas after listening to the podcast, but still, Korean is a different language. What was the encouraging boost about it? I mean, have you watched shows in other languages?
No. I mean, before K-dramas, I only watched things in languages I was fluent in. You know, English, Hindi, Marathi, that was it. But then there was like a sudden surge of people watching K-dramas. And then Meena Maushi told me, I've started too, and I usually don't like romance, but I really love this. And I was like, okay, so there must be something about it. There must be something interesting if she's saying that it has helped her watch romance and enjoy it. So I got into it, and it was love at first sight. Honestly, it was.
What was the first drama, Chaitra?
Crash landing on you. Yes.
That is the inspiration for our podcast name as well.
Yes.
Abby, what about you?
So I do watch things in other languages. So I speak a little bit of German. And so I do gravitate towards German dramas. So there's been a very good recent one, Deutschland 83, which has turned into two more series. So yeah, European and Scandinavian things. Like I absolutely loved The Bridge, which is a sort of lesser known Scandinavian one, which has been published on UK TV. So for me, I don't find it dislocating to watch with subtitles. And I enjoy the cultural distinctions and the differences that you see when you're watching shows from elsewhere, while at the same time recognising the similarities and you know the human aspect of all of it. So yeah, I'm quite keen to go and look at all these different things. And we have great access in the UK to a lot of that stuff anyway. So we're really fortunate to see a lot of it.
Still, Korean is different from your other European choices that were airing in UK, right? Diagrammatically opposite.
Yeah, it is in some ways. I think they're trying to do something perhaps a little bit different sometimes, but there are definitely parallels as well. So the first one that I chose to watch was Hot Stove League. And I specifically chose that to because it was about baseball, which is something that I already have an interest in. And so I thought that that would kind of lead me in. I wasn't feeling in a very romantic frame of mind in the middle of COVID when I first thought I'd go and look at K-drama. So I was like, let's start somewhere else. But obviously I had to start watching it because, you know, Meenal's telling me to do it. And I always do what Meenal tells me to do.
Okay.
And
we all do. We all do.
Yeah. But more importantly, you know, having suggested it to her that you have people come along who've got no background, I thought, oh, I've sort of signed myself up by accident there. So I went all in.
When she said this to me, I said, Abby, you do realize you're going to be the guinea pig for us, right, when we do this episode. So she said, right, I dug my grave, so I'm going to do it. So she specifically asked me, I don't want romance. What other genres have you watched? So I gave A Stranger for Legal. I gave Hot Stuff League. I told her Kingdom in case you want political thriller and zombie. She's like, no, I'm not in the mood for horror. So when she started sending me her reactions, I was very happy because I loved Hot Stuff League a lot. So it was nice to know that, yeah, when you recommend somebody and they start liking it, I was like, yes, I think I've got them on. So going back, which K-dramas have you watched? And I want to know what cultural similarities you found or what dissimilarities you found. What are the new things about the Korean culture that you discovered that you really liked about it?
Okay, so I watched Crash Landing on You, which was my my first K-drama. And obviously my favorite, It's Okay to Not Be Okay.
Sangeeta and Upuna are going to be yay!
I've rewatched it like 3 or 4 times. I really love it. I love it that much. Yeah, I really love it. Then I've watched Hometown Cha-Cha-Cha. But my problem was I became a restless viewer because of the pandemic. So I didn't finish a lot of K-dramas. I started like a dozen, but I didn't finish any of them. So I'm like trying really hard to get back on my finishing streak. So I started Guardian, Hotel de Luna, My Love from the Startup. And I love all of them, but the thing is, I go to turn the next episode on, and then I see another K drama that looks even more interesting, and then I turn it on, and so it's like a death spiral, basically.
You said you enjoy rom coms, Chaitra, but none of the dramas that you've quoted are really actually rom coms, you know.
Yes, I know. So that's why, like, I love romance, but like in K dramas, no matter what the genre is, there's always like an element of comedy.
True, yes.
And that's what I really love. Like, even if it's like a thriller, there's still some funny bits.
They're like Bollywood, right?
Yeah, it's very
it's
similar.
It's a mix of everything. A Bollywood film gives you everything.
Exactly. Like, there's so much spice everywhere. And it's very Bollywood-esque in that way. And as for like the cultural parallels, one of the things that I really loved was like, it's a really tiny thing, but like, they take off their shoes before they get inside the house. And I think that's so nice to see, because in like other media, which is like Western made, you don't see that because that's not in their culture. And I think that's okay. But like, it's really nice to see that, hey, they do that too.
I totally agree with you. Yeah. What I noticed first in K-dramas in terms of culture was what you said, removing the shoes. And the other thing is sitting down on the floor, which you don't see in any Western content ever.
Exactly.
Something, you know, very rarely you get to see. But as a family sitting together on the floor and eating and all that, that is very Asian thing, I think.
But Koreans have more reasons to sit on the floor. Their furnaces heat up the floors rather than the central eating thing.
And also the whole the moms forcing their children to eat more. You're getting thin. You need to eat more. It's such an Indian concept too. Like, I've had my mom slide so much extra food onto my plate. She's like, you're a growing child. You need to eat more. And that's happened so many times that I found that like instantly relatable.
Chaitra, the act of keeping food in somebody else's plate is considered an act of love,
yeah,
in Korean. They make a lot of emphasis,
exactly,
on that fact.
And so that was like, I think that was like really cute and like really nice to see the cultural parallels. And another thing I really love about their dramas is their food. I mean, I've never had Korean food personally, but it just looks so appetizing for some reason. It looks really good. So I am dying to have some, yeah.
Either I'll make for you when I come over, or we will go to a place.
Yes.
Okay? That's a promise.
Yes. Let's do both.
Yeah, let's do both.
Okay, so I've watched Hot Stove League and I have started watching It's Okay Not to Be Okay, and I'm utterly hooked on that. That's absolutely brilliant. We'll come on to it, I'm sure. Other things, though, my big confession is we only got Netflix a few weeks ago, so obviously getting access to things has been a bit more difficult. So I've kind of dipped in and out of stuff. But those are the two that I really focused on for lots of different reasons, which I'm sure we'll touch on. But for me, I think, you know, Chaitra has brought out some of the great things there about the cultural, what I call texture of these dramas. You know, they are utterly engrossing. And, you know, even thinking about, Chaitra mentioned earlier about like Downton Abbey, for example, but it's a similar kind of thing. It's very immersive, right? You're completely in the culture. You know, there's great authenticity in everything from what they might be wearing to, you know, the food to just little moments and snippets of the culture that you see. And okay, some of those things might be slightly amplified or maybe not always entirely as realistic as it might be in real life. But still, I really like the texture and that sort of immersive feeling. The other things that I definitely got from Hot Stove League was a lot about, you know, the idea of high performance and kind of winning being quite important in society. They deal very interestingly with shame and blame and honour in Hot Stove League as well. And what I think is quite clever with that one is that because I expect in lots of other Korean things, you know, certainly some of the things that I've seen, those themes are picked up on using a family structure perhaps, whereas actually here it's about a sports team and it's sort of making that parallel between a sports team and a family, but still bringing out those same themes, those same cultural, you know, things that are really vital and endemic in the society and that knit everybody together. And I think the way they do that is quite clever. And it sort of brings that sense of, you know, being part of something, being committed to something. And then what does that mean in terms of your behaviours? How do you talk to each other? How do you interact? I think they put that on screen very, very entertainingly, but also very authentically.
One other thing I wanted to ask you, Abigail, in It's Okay to Not Be Okay, since you've started that, you've observed the animations that they show in the beginning, and she's a fairy tale writer. In UK as such, children's literature is given a lot of focus. Children's books and illustrated books and everything, it's a huge focus in UK, right? So do you sort of find that a parallel, that sort of connect? Because K-dramas, if you watch some more, I would definitely like to talk to you more about that, because K-dramas focus a lot on literature and fairy tales and their own interpretations of popular fairy tales, folklore. So that's a very fascinating thing that we have found in K-dramas. So did you also feel that connect?
Then I'm definitely going to talk to you more about it, Sangeeta, because I'm a literature graduate. So that was what I read at university. And I love books. And so showing that portrayal of it in TV is something that I'm always hooked on and fascinated by. I also do love animation. I make no bones about the fact that I love, you know, your Disneys and your Tim Burtons and various other things. And I will happily sit and watch a cartoon on a Saturday morning the same as any other eight-year-old, you know. And that's really what got automatically engrossed me in It's Okay was this starting animation and the way that you interweave the stories that she's writing with the story in each episode, even just down to the textural things of calling the episodes chapters rather than episodes, you know, it really brings you into that
exactly,
world,
yeah.
And there's that sort of sense of imagination connecting with reality and how do they interplay. I think that that's all fascinating, and it's beautiful. I love the artistry of it, and the way that the program is produced.
Absolutely,
really,
yes.
Plays on that, you know, those moments that are frozen, mm-hmm. that look almost like an illustration from a book perhaps, rather than something that's on telly. And I think the way they play with that is very you know, entertaining. It draws you in, but it is also telling you something very important about the fact that these stories that we learn as children actually do shape us significantly. And those are both,
yes.
the lived stories that we exist inside of, you know, the family stories or the culture we're brought up in and those things. But then also the things that we read. You know, I know this about myself, having spent a bit more time self-reflecting in recent years. You know, I can very much link how I relate to the world and people and things in probably things and stories of books and things that I've learned from others from when I was really small. And I think we're all like that. We're all built from that. And that's really what you're seeing in that playing out, is that actually those experiences, for good or for bad, shape you. And it's then what you choose to do with them that makes the difference. And obviously they do that very well in that first episode. True. About, you know, the boy who fed on nightmares. I think that's really setting you up for what it's going to feel like through the rest of the drama.
I noticed, and I'm impressed, that in 1.5 dramas, Abby, you have noticed about the concept of shame and family honor. It is definitely an underlying theme in loads of Korean dramas. And you've picked on it in 1.5 dramas.
I suppose that's because, as a British person, it's not something that exists in our society in quite the same way, or is lived and breathed in quite the same way, I would say, as it is in particularly Asian cultures. I mean, you do see it in other places worldwide as well, but it's definitely different and it's there. And obviously, like anything, taken to an extreme, it can be dangerous, you know, it can be debilitating. But I also reflect on it as a British person looking at my culture, where there's a lot of more of a, you know, maybe we don't put enough emphasis on people living the consequences of their actions in some parts of society or in certain ways. Maybe we don't respect family structures or our elders in quite the same way, or bring that out in some of our dramas in the same way. And there's more, I suppose, of a sense of the importance of the individual over the importance of a society or a family. And I think that's something that British dramas will play around with sometimes. But it's funny, because actually that's one of the reasons that Hot Stove Lee drew me in, is because I find Baek Seung-soo's character very engrossing. Because going back to what I was saying about, you know, the stories that we all live with and grow up with, I look at my sort of viewing or reading history, I actually do find it very appealing to watch those characters who are maybe giving something up for others, whether that's for family, whether it's for their community. You know, you see some examples of this in Western. I think the most famous one would probably be It's a Wonderful Life. James Stewart's character kind of subordinates his wishes and dreams to run the family business. But you see other little moments of it, like Laura Linney's character in Love Actually.
Yes.
But we don't really go into it. We don't really explore it very much. We kind of observe that these people exist, and then we put them to one side because they don't really fit with the cultural norms in the same way.
But what attracted all of us, and we keep talking about it on all the episodes in the podcast, is how every character has an arc and how we see the development. So in the first 4-5 episodes, you're wondering, why is he like this? And you're probably feeling anger, or you're feeling supportive, or you're falling in love with the character. And then you come to realize that, oh, I misjudge this character. No, there's so much more to it. And luckily, 16 hours gives them the bandwidth to develop the story. You know, 2 hours in a movie or 8 hours of episodes, like we see in BBC, 6 hours or 8 hours may not give them that time. But 16 hours, some of the dramas utilize it so well to build the character arcs. And even in Hot Stuff League, you don't know so much about the personal trauma that Nam Gung Min's character is going through and why it reflects in how he becomes what he is, or his dynamic with his brother. So many things come out much later in the episode, and it all makes sense how he has brought that whole management together as well. In, you know, from his personal experience, how he builds that into this professional. So this is a key point for me, why I'm still hooked to K-dramas. And I'm sure Sangeeta, Poonam have similar experiences to talk about.
Even though, like you said, the time gives them enough opportunity to explore the characters and explain to us in detail, like how bring their whole story in front of us, right? So similarly, the world building that they do, say you're talking about Hot Stuff League, anybody who doesn't have any clue about baseball also can watch it and enjoy it, because there are some simple aspects of it which they go to great lengths to make sure that the viewers understand. I think that also K-dramas do very well.
So I have to say, this attention of detail is a common pattern in K-dramas. There is another drama that I have actually talked a lot about on K-dramas. It's called Wild Romance, and the lead character is a baseball player. So each episode is named after a baseball concept, which kind of plays out in their real life story as well. So they have, I'm sure the K-drama writer, when they charted the whole 16 episodes, they actually said that, okay, this episode I'm going to talk about this baseball concept, and this is how the story will turn. So I think they do that well. And as a result, I also ended up learning something.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, if we were to go carry on down that train of thought, so, you know, the baseball kind of referencing and the textual context of Hot Stove League is very thorough, I think, and it's really knitted into the story. So there are parallels. They're not redoing the story, they're not retelling it, but there are parallels with a real life situation of the Oakland Athletics in the US. So Billy Beane was the general manager. He introduced a statistical analyst called Peter Brand to help him to choose players, because the analyst noticed that actually some of the kind of star players didn't actually perform as you expect them to in order to get the points you need for the wins. And this is basically what Baek Seung-soo is starting out to do in those first couple of episodes. You know, he famously wants to get rid of the star player Deong-gyu, and that's because he's saying actually he's not performing the way we need him to get the points that we need. And that's hugely controversial, as it was in real life. But now, of course, you know, a few decades later, actually this kind of statistical analysis is ingrained in a lot of sports. Arsene Wenger did it very successfully with Arsenal Football Club in the UK. So that textual, that kind of real baseball, you know, they're really immersing you in that culture and that experience. And they even reference it. I don't know whether it's deliberate, but the Dreams uniforms, you know, the team strip is yellow and green, and it's the same as the Oakland Athletics at the time they were being managed by Beane.
Oh.
So I don't know whether they're doing that deliberately, but it was just something that I instantly picked up on. If you've seen the film Moneyball, then that's, you know, that you'll notice it there. So that for me was a kind of real standout right at the start, got me really hooked, because I thought they're doing something really clever here. They're connecting the whole Western baseball genre with the Korean baseball league as well.
Nice. Chaitra, what were the parallels that you drew? What is it that you liked about? What is it that kept you hooked?
So like I said, It's Okay to Not Be Okay is my favorite for a multitude of reasons, Kim Soo-hyun being one of them. but the basic thing that I liked about all K-dramas was that none of the characters are extreme. Like, no one is the hero or the villain in a sense. They're all great characters. Everyone has their story, like real human beings. They're all multifaceted. And they have their vices, but, like, it's so unflinchingly real in the way, like, It's Okay to Not Be Okay, the way it showcases humanity. I never get bored, no matter who's on screen. I'm always invested in the story because I want to know more about each character, because they just feel that interesting. And I really liked that non-parallel, because in Indian cinema, very often characters are differentiated into like heroes and villains, and it's a part of our culture. But I love how in Korean dramas, like, everyone is a person and not an adjective. So I really love that. And so that's why I really loved It's Okay to Not Be Okay, because it's like it really hit me, the whole character and their storylines. And it's also really cinematographically, it's like really beautiful. Like each frame is just, it's art. I can't stop watching it. It's really beautiful. And the animation, like you said, the way they've connected her stories and her books to the actual storyline is like, it's really, really lovely. And I just love the whole thing. I love their performances, like especially the two leads. They've done like a phenomenal job, and I really love the way that my favorite part about It's Okay is the fact that they don't heal each other. They're just there for each other while they heal themselves, which I think is so important in like media these days. It's getting very toxic, like, you healed me, but like I don't see why that's a good thing, because then you aren't helping yourself, really. You're helping other people, and then you become reliant on them, and it's a vicious circle. So I really love the fact that they heal themselves, and the other person is just there for them to help them through it. So Yeah, so there, I really love It's Okay to Not Be Okay.
I can't believe you're a teenager, Chaitra, yeah. From what you're speaking. Seriously, I mean, I'm just telling myself she's just a teenager. That was so profound, seriously.
Sangeeta, you realize my struggle, I have seen her like a baby, okay, 1 year, she's 16, okay, I have seen the transformation and I keep talking to her mom, is she the same little girl, because I want the 5-year-old Chaitra back.
And I think you have learned a very important lesson pretty early, that we don't have to rely on somebody else to, you know, yeah. Another thing, people keep saying, you know what, you're... depression or your this thing made you stronger. No, that actually weakened me and that almost killed me. But the thing that made me stronger was me, who survived, who had support, who took support. So you have taken a life lesson so early.
And you've picked up on something that, if we go back to your mental health episode for a moment, you know, forgive me, I've forgotten the doctor's name, but she observes in there that actually people can heal within relationships, whether those are romantic relationships, whether those are family relationships or friends, but she makes the point that they are healing within it, you know, it is not the relationship in itself or the connection with others in itself that will necessarily do the healing. It is obviously helpful and very important, you know, and it's something I'm very invested in. I'm a mental health first aider in my workplace, and I spend a lot of time talking to people about talking and connecting with people. But Chaitra's point there is that they are healing themselves, and they're doing hard work and they're going through it, and it's difficult and you see them struggle through it, you know, and I think that's what makes it so real, but also quite inspiring and motivating, to that idea that, you know, we've all got it within us, we just have to sometimes you know, go through those difficult moments and know that within ourselves is the solution or the help.
Abby, I'm also a mental health advocate at work. That's the same kind of thing, the first aid thing. I'm not a professional therapist, but my job is to guide them to the right thing.
Just want to divert to a bit lighthearted. We feel Koreans do comedy really well. Okay, that's something which is we've loved about it. Now, I know you've just watched one or two dramas. Did anything stand out for you in terms of comic timing or the comedy elements that they brought into the story? And also, which were your favorites? So take the stage and also talk about your favorite characters and what you loved about them.
There are lots of laugh out loud moments in Hot Stove League. You know, there are some serious minutes, there's some quite dark, even creepy moments. But, you know, particularly between the characters of Lee Se-young and Han Jae-hee, they're working together, and he's a sort of, in her eyes, a kind of upstart, you know, he's got his job through his connections maybe, or money, rather than by working hard, and he's constantly striving to change her perception of him, and a lot of comedy ensues from that, and his efforts and her sort of not being sure whether his efforts are sincere or not sincere, and there's almost like a sibling relationship that develops between them, which brings a lot of humor. But also because of seeing Sue's character, he's so you know, he's very serious, but there are little moments where he manages to keep that deadpan expression while perhaps saying something that is a little bit funny or sarcastic, or where his interactions with others then create, he becomes a sort of straight man, so to speak, to their comedy. And I think that works really well. And then when you do finally get an odd smile from him later in the series, it's quite rewarding because you feel like people have worked hard for it, you know, so... I really like that aspect.
Yeah, one of the moments I remember is from Hometown Cha-Cha-Cha, where they're trying to keep the relationship a secret. So she hits him every single time. And that made me laugh out loud every single time. Like, I knew it was coming. I knew it was coming, but it was still so funny. And in It's Okay to Not Be Okay, I love how Koh Mun-yong, she just lashes out. Like, she doesn't give a damn what anyone thinks, and she takes a knife to the plate to shut her manager up, and she just yells at people, and I think that's really funny sometimes. Like, I know it displays her antisocial behavior, but like, it's really funny to see how she's really adamant that people do what she wants all the time, and how she goes to any length to get it done.
And it's funny because she's like a tiny creature and she's
threatening. And she
like avenge herself on other people who are like twice the
exactly,
size of her.
Exactly. So it's like really funny to see that. And no, so my favorite scene is the one in which she's introduced and she literally just takes a knife to the plate and makes like a really horrible noise to shut her manager up. It's really funny to me.
But that manager character was also not written very caricaturally. Yeah. Like he knew what Komon Young is going on. He is genuinely on her side. He genuinely feels for her. In a moment he realizes that she has come back to the cursed castle. He's really worried that she has gotten sleep paralysis again. So in Indian movies, I'm sorry to bring this parallel, but Indian movies, a comical character is a buffoon and hasn't been thought through, and there is lack of depth to it, and that doesn't happen in Korean dramas, which I like.
The only thing wrong about him are his methods. Like he really wants to help, but he just doesn't know the right way to do it. So he tries to drag her out of the house and everything. Like, it's really funny. But you're right. In like in Indian cinema, the funny character is always like a buffoon. Yeah, and it's really sad to see all that potential go to waste.
Did you find anything lacking in all these dramas that you watched, which you felt, I didn't like this, or this could have been done better, or I have seen it better done in Indian films or in Bollywood or Hollywood films or British television?
For me, because I loved Oh Young-se's character, I mean, I think he's brilliant as an actor, by the way. I think he steals pretty much every scene he's ever in. It's the reason that, you know, having watched Hot Stove League, I went straight to It's Okay, because I saw him in the cast list. And I was like, right, I've got to watch that. And he's fantastic. And so you do see his character arc in Hot Stove League, and it's very good. It's very well done. But I kind of wanted a bit more of him, you know, because it's a really authentic portrayal. Like Chaiswara was saying earlier, these people are not one-dimensional at all. And so the fact that he's able to play very carefully with what is really supposed to be the villain character, but he has his own arc of redemption. And so and you understand why he's like that, and you see him kind of playing between the powered and the powerless, being powerful. That I thought was excellent, and I did sometimes just want a little bit more of him. The other thing that I felt maybe, and again it was because of the strength of the characterization was so good, was actually in the two main characters' parents. So we see Lee Se-young's mum, and we see Baek Seung-soo's parents as well, and they have kind of critical moments, that, you know, critical little snippets that they share. And they kind of push the story forward, or push the characterization of that lead character forward a little bit through what they're sharing about them, or about the family context. And so I did, having created such strong characters, I thought it was a shame not to see a little bit more of them through the drama. But again, I think that's possibly because it's spending more time on the family of the team than the actual real families. So I understand why it might have been a little bit too much to kind of muddy the waters.
So Abby, since you liked Oh Jung-se, I mean, yeah, It's Okay to Not Be Okay, definitely. Poonam and Sangeeta can go on about it, how much they love. And they've done that in our supporting cast episode.
I remember.
You should also watch Touch Your Heart, because he's the other extreme, like... He's so comic, and I was falling off the couch all the time, because the range he shows is just amazing.
Exactly, the diversity and to do it with such sincerity, you know, you never doubt his character. It's not like the character's got lost at all. He really can be all of these things at once.
Chaitra said that they don't have definitions of clearly that leads. For me, It's Okay to Be Not Okay is like that. According to me, tradition. Like a traditional K-drama, there is a male lead and female lead. That's not how I felt about it. I felt like there's three, the relationship between those three, the two brothers and Ko Min Young, they were the leads. And if you take out one of them, it doesn't work. It simply doesn't work. It is the story of those three.
Exactly. Because each one of their relationships has made them who they are. So that's why it's my favorite.
My favorite is Ko Min Young and Oh Jung-se's relationship.
Yes, it's so cute. Their fights are the cutest.
They both seem like totally equal, with equal mental capabilities,
exactly,
by the way.
Exactly. They're two little kids. They're two little kids, and Kim Si-yeon is their dad. That's the dynamic. That's the dynamic.
And the resolvement amongst themselves as well, yeah, but always.
And I think that's really lovely.
And that ensemble cast is something that I think all the Korean dramas that I've watched, and actually a lot of the movies as well, do very well. So even though when you have those leads, there are certain dramas where you see more that that ensemble, the wider group, is really performing extremely hard to keep everything together. I mean, obviously Hot Stove is entirely an ensemble piece in many respects, but even in some of the other dramas that I've kind of dipped in and out of, you get that same thing, and that's something that always appeals to me when I'm watching, you know, whether it's British or other European dramas. I think a lot of them, and sitcoms as well, you know, we talked about Friends, you know, that's an ensemble piece at the end of the day. Some of the most successful ones are the ones where you've got a range of characters and they all really commit to those characters very well. Even if they're only in one scene of an episode, you know, you're still getting a really important part of them.
Jaitra, which were your favourite ones?
So I have a lot of, like, so I'm very easy to please, I would say. Like, so it happens really rarely that I watch something and I don't like it, or I pick up a book and I don't like it. It's very rare. But one that I didn't finish because it got a bit boring for me was Vincenzo. It was really slow, and I was really into it because it looked really cool. It looked like a Bollywood film.
It looked so glossy.
Yeah.
Very sleek. The action was very sleek. Exactly. Their characters were so well placed out, and
that's why I wanted to get into it. But like after like an episode and a half, I was just like, this is too slow. I need some things to pick up pace.
And that's one drama actually lacks what we discussed about characters, the other character actors. That's one drama which hasn't done a good job of it.
And again, actually, if you see the supporting cast and the actors and actresses who are playing that whole gang in that shopping mall, they're actually very good.
They're all very good actors. Very good. Exactly.
And some of them have a great theater background. How do you say it? Our opinion is slightly different from the popular ones you'll see if you go on social media about Vincenzo. We felt the characters didn't develop. So I never got invested in the supporting cast. I was just interested in the lead pair. And that's only the scenes I watched and I finished Vincenzo.
Yeah.
Out of curiosity, is that a newer drama or is that one of these? Sort of...
It's a new one. Yeah. 2021 release. Right.
You see, I feel it's just a personal opinion, but I think the challenge you've got with the binge watching culture that we sort of live in now, especially with all the streaming services, is they don't have the same need to hook somebody in on that first episode. And then, because, you know, in the old days, you had to wait till the next week for it to get your audience back and to know whether it was successful or not. Whereas now they might have fallen asleep on the sofa, but it's automatically playing episodes 2, 3, and 4. So you're not really getting the same feedback. So I think that it lets some people get away with, as you described it, something that is very attractive and glossy and shiny. You know, you want to watch it, but also you're kind of forgotten why you're watching.
Yeah, that's what happened. Because
it happened to me also.
Yeah, it was really pretty looking. It was really pretty looking. Yeah, but
I tried hard for 4 episodes and then I gave up.
Yeah, exactly. And another one that I really didn't like, enjoy, was What's Wrong with Secretary Kim. I started the first episode because my sister said it was nice and I started it. And it felt way too flippant. Like it was too carefree, in my opinion.
It was too unreal.
Yeah, so... Yeah.
It's unreal.
Yeah. And not in like the nice sense. In the... Yeah, so fantasy is another one of my favorite genres. And when I want to explore with K-dramas, I started Hotel Luna because I heard it's like a good fantasy drama.
A lot of comments on Hotel Del Luna.
I was the guinea pig who watched this as a homework out of these three, and I know how much I suffered through it.
And if you want fantasy and a good romance, my vote would go for Legend of the Blue Sea. Because again, I don't even enjoy watching that male lead, but I really, the actress is phenomenal, but I really enjoyed their romance and their scenes. So, you know, and the concept, I'm like, how can you take a romance between, like, of course, it's Little Mermaid glorified, a mermaid and a human, but they actually make it convincing. And I was so interested and engrossed. I'm like, what's happening next? What's happening next?
And you, since you enjoy some comedy that has some hilarious moments which you can never even think of.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I started my love from the star for Kim for Kim Soo-hyun, obviously. And I like it, frankly. Like, it was nice and it's nicely done and I will continue it. But like, what's wrong with secondary? It was just no. It's a big no from me.
You started Goblin, yes. Right, Chetra? But Goblin, you wouldn't like it for romance so much. At least it didn't work for me, the romance part. What worked?
Yeah, Goblin was more of a comedy.
Comedy, yeah. So that's also really nice. So yeah, we'll see where it goes.
I think expectation setting helps a lot. I wish before I watched Goblin or other shows, I kind of knew, okay, this is probably not good and this works. I would have gone with a better expectation. For me, if I'm not well prepared, then sometimes I come back with the feeling of being underwhelmed.
Since we talked about all the elements of K-dramas, now let's talk about the actors. Do you have any actors or actresses who really stood out for you? Abby has been raving about Oh Jung-se and Nam Gung-min. So any other actors and actresses who stood out for you or the characters that really worked for you?
Well, I mean, I don't have all the actors' names to hand, but I think
tell the drama and the character.
The trouble is, I'll just end up talking about Oh Jung-se all over again.
Oh yes, you can always do that on our podcast.
You know, and that was the thing, because I was halfway through Hot Stove League when I was listening to your podcast and you mentioned him, and I was like, oh, it's not just me then. Like, it's everybody else is obsessed too. But why is it? You know, I think what you see, and you know, you see it in Parasite, you see it in some of the there's a lot of very excellent Korean and even Japanese as well war dramas that are I love my history, and so I've watched a lot of war movies over the years. And actually, sometimes it's those characters where, you know, maybe they're not the most you know, they're not the kind of physically attractive hero kind of characters, but they're the ones that you latch onto and that you follow, and you know, that they have that kind of they're not good or bad, you know, they're just human, and maybe their circumstances are dictating who they are and what they've become, maybe more than other things. And that's really why I sort of latched on, I think, to the actors that I have done, because they're the ones that I feel like are really giving you that diversity and that range. You know, obviously Min Nam-kyun in Hot Stove, you know, he's almost hard to understand what his character is about for a little while. You know, those early episodes, you're left a bit like his colleagues wondering why he's like this. And then you see this kind of emotion develop and this backdrop and, you know, these weird little character traits, like the fact that he takes the picture of the food, which for episodes and episodes, I was sat there scratching my head, because I personally hate it when people do that. And so I was sat there going, why? Because that is so incongruous with the rest of his character. Why is that a thing in his character portrayal? And when you then find out why it is, it's such a sweet reason, and it's so connected to who he is emotionally and sensitively, that I was like, oh, I think I love you all the more now, you know. But he just does it really kind of like robotically, doesn't he? You know, and the fact that, bom, 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 you know, that ability to be quite flat and dry and not give much away is really hard, especially when he's being surrounded by other actors who, because of the scenes involved, are perhaps being quite emotional or dramatic, and he still manages to keep that kind of really dead. I would love to see what the outtakes were like, because it must be hilarious.
But that's what I liked about Hot Stuff League. I mean, though he came across as a very, unemotional kind of a guy, there was so much going on with him, and for him to maintain that balance and focus on his job, knowing what is going to be the fate of the team, is something impressed me so much. So I also love Nam Gung-min a lot. And Poonam recommended, and I went and watched Beautiful Gongshim, where he plays this amazing, lovely character there. It is completely in contrast to what he plays in Hot Stuff League. And that's another enjoyable rom-com, I felt. So, yeah, it's very
it's
nice.
On my list for sure.
I thought Gongshim was also pretty cute.
Very cute.
Show.
Very cute. We really enjoyed it. It's really very sweet drama.
So, seeing Nam Gung-min from that intense role to that slightly light-hearted role was actually a good change. I think these are the only two dramas where I like Nam Bong Min. I watched Awaken, but I didn't like him there. I don't like one man savior like you see in American cinemas. And Nam Bong Min's characters are like that in several of the Korean dramas later. But Hot Stuff League was nuanced.
Yeah, fair
nuanced.
Enough.
Very nuanced. Very detailed. Very, very nice drama.
How about you, Chaitra?
Like I said, I'm obsessed with Kim Soo Hyun. Okay, he's
lot of people are, Chaitra. Yeah. Lot of people are.
Now I know you are a teenager.
Yeah, he's really cute. He's really cute.
I think this podcast might be sponsored by him.
No, so what is it? What is it about him that you like? What is what are the aspects of his acting that got you hooked?
He's cute, didn't he? Isn't that enough? Meenal Maushi is like, what aspect of acting do you like? No, it's okay.
No, but I really did love his character in It's Okay, because like he's done a phenomenal job of playing a caregiver, not just professionally, but like even as a person. And I personally relate with that, because I've been a, like, it's in my personality to always like make sure that others are okay before I'm all right. So I feel like I really connected with him on an emotional level. And like the way he portrays his frustration, but he can't say anything because it might upset his brother, and he's like always doing what's best for his brother, and it's killing him, but he's still doing it. And when he says I have to put on a smile, and if I put on a smile, he believes that I'm happy, and putting on a smile isn't that hard, but then you, if you think about it, putting on a smile is one of the hardest things you can do if you're like genuinely angry or genuinely sad or like devastated or hurt. But I feel like the way he, his character progresses from someone who is deeply, deeply unhappy and full of grief about like his childhood, the way he was raised, his brother, everything, like guilt for the accident that happened with his brother in the river. The whole thing, and the way his brother says, and the patient from his first job says, "Don't smile, it disgusts me. You look like the Joker because your eyes are sad and just smiling." And I think, and I love the way his smile progresses. And he, at the end of the last episode, you can see him smiling with his eyes. And I think that's like really lovely. Like the progression is really nice to see how he genuinely becomes happier and heals. And like I feel like if I just stare at his face, I can tell whatever he's feeling, because he's done such a fantastic job. And obviously staring at his face would be like a real treat. So
and he's hilarious in My Love from the Star, isn't it?
Yes, he's so good. I'm genuinely, I have an obsession with him. He's like, I'm not even kidding, he's the only actor I follow, only K-drama actor I follow on Instagram. Just
welcome to our world, Dad. We all been there.
Just so I can see his pictures, that's it. On my feed.
What we can't see behind her computer screen is all the posters.
Yeah,
on her wall.
Whenever I feel sad, I just scroll through his Instagram. Like, that's it. That's my therapy.
I do it the same with Lee Dong-wook. I watch his off-screen videos.
So it's not a generational thing. It is across generations, yes, that women experience this.
He's a heartbreaker.
But you know, you made a very profound point again, Chaitra. Sacrifices, we actually lap up sacrifices, but sacrifices don't make anybody happy. Not the ones they are being made for, not the one who makes it. It may only breed resentment on the part of the one who makes it, and it kind of poisons the relationship. And in Asian cultures, this is such a hard thing to accept or tell.
It's glorified. Yeah, sacrifice is glorified.
Yep. And it's funny you mentioned that, because that's why I mentioned It's a Wonderful Life, because that's again a kind of similar story. It's the sort of Western version of it, and it kind of gets twisted a little bit. But that's where I think that cultural side of things that you see in these Asian dramas is very different to what you would see in other Western things, because sacrifice is just not something that gets rewarded or glorified. And actually, that I think it's important what Chais was saying there about the actor's portrayal of it, and it's okay, because although he's showing that self-sacrificing behavior, he is not entirely lost. He is still a person, and you still see him as an individual. Whereas I do feel if that were a Western drama, they would kind of subordinate him to such an extent that you actually almost don't like him anymore. You don't believe in him anymore. You think he's just a bit of a sap, or he becomes too passive, because we can't reward that sort of culture. So although I agree with you that, you know, it's almost too rewarded and too honored and revered in a lot of Asian cultures to go to that extent of caregiving and self-sacrificing, I think in the West we've swung far too far the other way. And there needs to be a balance, you know, a sense of saying you can look after others in your life. Being a caring person is not a bad thing. It's about balancing it out for yourself, recognizing it maybe when you've taken it too far, and finding that boundary. And you know, I speak from a lot of personal experience as well of seeing that relationship, as we just heard, you know, deteriorate or being damaged, because actually those relationships will be damaged if these two people or sometimes more people in it are not looking after themselves and are not kind of still allowed to be themselves. But that's why I think that the strength of his portrayal in the drama is so good, because you still believe in him, you still want to follow him, you still want him to succeed. And I think that's great, very well written in that respect and very well performed.
I have a curious question to ask. It just occurred to me. So Abby, you have watched about two dramas, but Chaitra, probably you can answer me. Do you go back to your favorite scenes and rewatch them multiple times? I just want to know, is it something that we only do, or is it something comes naturally to others as well?
Yes, I'm a chronic rewatcher. I'm not joking. I was literally just rewatching It's Okay to Not Be Okay. I am no lie. And I'm the kind of person who reads a book online and then buys the hard copy so I can reread my favorite scenes with the hard copy in my hand. Yeah, exactly. So the number of times I've cracked the spines on my books it's literally like there's infinite. There's no count. So like it does come naturally to me to just click through and watch my favorite scenes but what happens is, because I love the whole drama, I give up. I stop fast forwarding, and then end up watching the whole drama again, all 16 hours. So I just click play on the first episode these days and just let the whole thing pass me by.
I never understood the concept of rewatching. The only two movies that I've rewatched too much is Chak De India and this musical. And the only musical that I like starring Julie Andrews. What's that?
Sound of Music.
Sound of Music. These are the only two movies that I have watched too many times. But K-drama introduced something new in me. Now I remember this scene was so great. So actually remember episode 11, this time I have to go back and watch this.
Wow. I know you've talked about this a lot in the podcast. It's something I can't really relate to. Like I rewatch a lot, by the way, but I'll rewatch a whole thing. So I'll rewatch a series. I'll start a whole series from start to tends not to be dramas. So the things I'll go back to again and again are sitcoms. I mean, I know certain sitcoms, like literally word verbatim, was a very famous British one. It's only Fools and Horses. It's a complete genre leap away from everything else, by the way. I love it partly because of its pathos. It does comedy brilliantly, stamped right against kind of drama and tragedy. You know, one minute you're literally laughing, the next minute you're in tears. But I will rewatch those endlessly. I'll rewatch all my musicals, you know, Top Hat and, you know, Singing in the Rain and those kinds of things. I'll watch over and over again. But I don't think there's anything wrong. But scenes, specific scenes, I don't know. I may be too tempted, like Chaitra. I'll just put the whole thing on.
Exactly. I have a record. Like, the thing is, because I have a good memory when it comes to dialogues and lyrics, when it comes to words, basically. So if I watch something once, I remember it. But if I rewatch it, I literally have movies I can recite from memory. starting with like with this, including the songs, the music, everything. Yeah, so my rewatching obsession is that bad.
So which ones are those?
So there's Zindagi Na Milegi Dobara, Ye Jawani Hai Deewani. Then there's Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which is one of my favorites.
Mine too.
She pushed me to watch it, so we had to watch it for her.
It's so good.
I save episodes of Brooklyn 99 thinking on a bad work day or something like that.
Exactly.
I'll go back and watch one episode of the new
episode. Yeah, I the proposal scene, I've watched the proposal scene about a million times, and I'm not exaggerating. I've watched it so many times, and it always makes me cry. So I'm not the kind of rewatcher who anticipates the feelings and they don't happen. I'm the kind who anticipates the feelings, and that's why I start crying early. So yeah, that's my rewatching, chronic rewatching.
So I have a question. I am not very gung-ho about remakes, okay, or adaptations, etc. But I want to know if the dramas that you watched Hot Sab League, Chaitra, you watched It's Okay to Not Be Okay. If they were to be remade in Hollywood, in British television, or Bollywood for you, Chaitra, who would you pick to play your favorite characters?
That's really difficult. That's a really
difficult. Take your time. Sorry, this is not a surprise question out of syllabus.
I didn't prepare for the test.
No, even before that, I want to know whether you want them to be remade at all or not.
I genuinely wouldn't. I think they would ruin it. Personally, I think they would ruin it.
How about you, Abby?
Yeah, I totally agree. I wouldn't want them remade, but I may be too biased. I think if certain of them were to be remade, you'd have to really find what I would describe as strong British or European actors and actresses, people who are used to blending drama and comedy, and because it's not easy, and I don't think the Americans do it brilliantly, unfortunately, you know. So I'm thinking of actors like, I don't know, say like a Martin Freeman or a, you know, Stephen Graham, these kinds of characters, these kind of actors who are used to, you know, one minute being really severe and the next minute kind of being the laugh out loud funny. I don't think that's something that's always easy to do. So yeah, I think you'd have to kind of work through the UK kind of backlog of actors and actresses. But even then, you know, in this day and age, I think whether they'd make it successfully, I agree. Just don't touch them, leave them where they are.
For me, it's not just about the actors. It's even about the storytelling. What I always say is that Korean way of storytelling is very different and unique from any of the other. Even among the Asian countries, the way Japanese do it, Chinese do it, Thai do it, and Koreans do it, it's entirely different. So to adapt that to other cultural context and have that kind of actors, like if you look at Korean actors, they're doing multiple things. Like most of them excel at sports, they've been in military, and most of them even sing. So they're multifaceted, multi-talented, which is very difficult to find in other cultures, I would say. I don't know about maybe Chinese, because probably they're also involved in all these things. But again, Chinese have very limited scope of doing things, right? You don't see as many different kinds of dramas that you see in Korean. So that is another thing that I am a little wary of, that the cultural context and that kind of wholesome narration is something may not be achievable in other cultures and languages.
So I hear you, everyone, but you know, I have a mixed feelings about the whole thing, because I know we are very attached to one way of storytelling or how we watch it because it worked for us, and we are very scared that it shouldn't be ruined. But you know what? The stories grow only when they are adapted, readapted, and retold, and in their own words in different cultures, because everybody has a right to see something, experience something as good within the context of their subculture or a culture and their language with their indigenous people. Everybody has a right to do that. So I'm a true liberal at that way, and I really want stories to grow. They've reached far enough to do that. But there are things that I'm also very attached to, and I'm worried about, you know, what if they adapt it and then they're going to ruin it. And you know what? It's okay. It's okay if some of them, you know, they don't do it exactly as how we believe in it. It is okay as long as it works for them. As long as the story is told with the right intention, I think it's okay. But it's very hard to accept when I hear, you know what, they are going to make this book into movie. Oh,
yeah. Yes.
Going to read the book. But you know what? A lot of people don't read the books. A lot of people don't go and watch in other languages. And they have all the right to know about those great stories. And that's how they spread.
So even I don't want it to be remade. But I feel like when I'm talking to my mom, she really wants to watch Korean dramas because of the stories I've been telling her. But her struggle is, Meenal, I can't read English on screen as fast as you can. And secondly, there aren't regional subtitles yet in Marathi or Hindi for her to read. So either it gets dubbed, which I think is another, it gets atrocious, but you know, at least for her, maybe she might start watching it, or it gets remade into a language that she can watch. So if you want to expand the audience, maybe that's what needs
absolutely
to be done.
Absolutely. Dubbing and remakes are highly underrated. Considering the wide variety of languages, especially Indians understand this more than other countries and cultures, because we have so many different languages and so many different cultures within one country. So it's important that everybody gets to hear the story.
And with mom, because she's been such a TV, movie, theater buff, and I got it from her. And now when I start telling her the stories about these dramas, she's so curious, but she's not able to watch them. So yes, maybe that might be.
Beliefs and practice, it's hard to coexist together. Yeah. Sometimes I totally understand that dilemma.
Yeah, and personally, I think if they were to, I would be overjoyed if they took the themes from, say, It's Okay and applied them into a say a different story, but with the same messaging, with the same overall.
Yeah.
If they did
exactly.
that for Indians,
exactly.
it would be groundbreaking, because we haven't had
True.
We haven't had that.
Exactly, like in the cultural context, in the same cultural context that Indians can relate.
And that's
to.
What a good adaptation
exactly.
does.
K-dramas are like we discussed, summer. Too real and some are too unreal, right? You get to see all kinds of dramas. So how do you prefer your content viewing? I wouldn't say not just K-dramas, but in general, whatever content you're watching, do you want it to be close to reality, or do you want it to be like as far away from reality so that I can just watch, have fun, relax? How do you prefer your content?
I like my K-dramas, at least. I don't know about other things, but they, I like them real, but they have like a slight touch of surreal, you know? Like, so it feels like we're in the same world, but not quite. That's why I love K-dramas, because they do that.
It's perfect for you. K-dramas are
yeah,
perfect for you.
Exactly. Because I love my books absolutely out of the world. I read only fantasy exclusively. I genuinely cannot handle nonfiction. It makes me have a nervous breakdown. So fiction is my, it's my go-to when reading, but, for K-dramas, definitely, like that dash of, select surrealism is what I look for all the time. And obviously fiction, fantasy, sci-fi is always a yes from me. I like the slight unrealistic part of it, the romanticism of life and of the romanticism of Korean culture and everything. Like, it's really, really lovely to see.
They make it almost poetic in some sense.
They do.
Yes.
They really do.
And they are full of these unrealistic situations where somebody is falling in love with a creature from space, or somebody is falling in love with a creature who has been alive for thousands
yes,
years.
Yes, exactly.
And North Korea and South Korea, if you come down
yes.
to
Earth.
It's never happening. But they make you believe that it will happen
yes,
and you will witness it.
Exactly.
That is the beauty of it. Abby, what about you?
I watch things based on the sort of mindset I'm in at the time. So I do enjoy my documentaries. In the drama genre, though, I also do enjoy things that are, we would sort of describe them in English as like gritty. So sort of very realistic, perhaps very hard to watch sometimes. So things like Ken Loach movies, or a recent example from the UK drama genre would be Happy Valley. where, you know, the drama is
yeah.
is hard to watch, but it's engrossing. It's very, very well performed. It's something that I think they do quite well in Europe. But then that is supposed to be different to then other things. And I think where I find it frustrating maybe, or, you know, me and my fiance were joking about this because he put a drama on recently. And I sort of said to him, well, this is silly because, like, she'd never live in a house like that if she has this job. And he was like, okay, this one's not meant to be like real. Like, it's okay to just want something that's colorful and whatever. But I could, for me, it was kind of a too much of a juxtaposition of it was supposed to be serious and real, while at the same time I was supposed to believe that side of things. So that kind of frustrated me in some respects when it's kind of a bit too faked up. I think what Chaitra and Poonam are just saying about the sort of poeticness or the realism of Korean dramas is where they do it very, very well. And I think it maybe is just testament to storytelling in the culture, is that they are able to take something and it does kind of have a realistic aspect to it. The characters are very well portrayed and well drawn, and they're quite whole, you know, they're not one-sided, but maybe parts of their world are a little bit more whether it's, you know, the clothes they're wearing or the food they're eating or something that's maybe kind of just softened a bit or made it that bit more attractive or nicer in order to kind of hold the viewer's attention. And I don't think there's anything entirely wrong with that. You know, it doesn't have to be not every drama is supposed to be the same in its approach. That's part of the joy of the genre, right? Is that you're watching a story and different people will take interpretations in different ways. And we've touched on other examples of this, you know, like your Downton Abbeys or your Crown, or, you know, yes, they are portraying people who could well be real, but it's not supposed to be, you know, immersive, or it's supposed to be escapist, and you're supposed to embrace it, and that's why you put it on your telly. And then the next day you want to be challenged, you want to ask questions of life, you'll put something else
on. Yeah, embrace it is the right message, Abby, because those houses, they are never gonna be right, because sometimes they are not even houses, they are parked themselves. In the locations episode, and we were amazed at the findings ourselves that how come, like, some of the things that made us believe are not even true at all.
Yeah, there were museums which got converted to houses, and we're like, art galleries into houses. I was imagining that maybe at some point, if I can have a house, maybe I'll decorate it like that, but it's not a house. So that's
all. They're definitely like romance novels, yeah. The settings in romance novels, the billionaires' houses, whatever they exactly. describe.
I mean, I feel glad I discovered K-dramas after my 20s and 30s, because life had happened and I don't have any expectations and I can sit back. But those who are watching it in their 20s are going to have a very tough time, I think.
I have a question. You both talked about the actors you like. Aren't there any Korean female actor that you like? Abby, Chaitra?
I mean, if we're talking about, obviously, it's okay. I love Soyeon. I loved her. Like, I loved her character because I feel like it was such a difficult role to portray as a completely psycho person who is not really, like, a bad person at heart. She was made into the person she is today, and she's trying to unlearn all her toxic behaviors. And, like I said, I love her sort of outbursts and her quiet moments and the way she's really, really upfront about what she wants. So it's like really, really, really nice to see. And like how she isn't feeling well. And so he takes her to a drive and then he asks her, what do you want to eat? And she says, you, I want to eat you. And I found that really fascinating because I'm the opposite of her. I can't like immediately say what I want, and like it was really cool to see her just like be really free, like really free with her opinion. Like, I hate you. It just to their face, like with a straight face, she's like, you're an idiot, and like as if it's a universal.
Especially women don't get to
point. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, men get to do it all the time, and we laugh it up, and we're like, whoa, cool guy. But there was a woman
exactly, and she's like, so as if it's a universal fact, like, you are an idiot. I'm not just saying it because right. I think so. You are an idiot. Like, I just really liked that side of her. Of her, like a she was really, really, really badass as a female character. So I really love that about her.
And she was a very unconventional female character yes, in K-dramas.
Yes, absolutely. Like, all the other female leads are, they're strong, but they're really very traditionally feminine, you know. But she's, like, she's bold.
Ultimately conforming to society.
Yeah, but she's, like, she's free about, like, she's bold. She literally does whatever she wants.
Right.
If she wants to break something, she breaks it. If she wants a knife, she steals it. So I think that, like, that was, like, really, really nice to see. Like, it was very empowering to watch, like, a woman who did whatever.
Even the typical life struggles of earning your bread and all, those are not her concerns. She's really bothered about all that.
Yeah, so. She's like, I'm 100,000 times richer than you are. It's no big deal.
Exactly.
It's no big deal. I just am. Deal with it.
Yeah.
For me, I think maybe, and I'm speaking with very little, dramas under my belt, so I hope to find more, but I wonder whether sometimes the female characters kind of do end up being put into pockets a bit more, and I think this happens
exactly.
Anyway.
Exactly, happens a lot,
lots of dramas. I don't think it's unique to Korean dramas. We talked about this. I know you've touched on it a lot in various podcasts in the series. I actually think that's where maybe Hot Stove League is good, because Park Yoon Bin's character, you know, the kind of lead female, she does quite well, I think, to kind of, you're not really watching her or thinking about her, I don't mean this in a bad way, as a woman, you know, you're just seeing her character in her role. It would have been very easy to have created a very kind of over emotional, affectionate or even romantic connection with the general manager, and they just don't go there, and they don't need to, and you don't miss it. You know, it's not like you're not waiting for it to happen even, because actually they're just doing their own jobs. You know, she's got her own strengths and independence, and that's where I think one of the reasons why I've talked about the parents, maybe it would have been nice to have the mums have a little bit more of a role, because I think those are, again, they're very authentic women. Like, I just love when her mum talks about the fact that maybe she'll go get this new job, or she'll, and you know, you get a sense of her almost growing as a person at a later stage in her life. And I think we're allowed to do that. You know, we're allowed to evolve and change as women, as anyone, but it's not always something that you see. It's like, you know, you kind of create your character and you become quite fixed and you're going to be that forever. And I think, you know, there's opportunity to do more of that. There's opportunity to see that. Even the communications league in Hot Stove, I love that scene where she's in front of the general manager, and the general manager kind of says to her, what, you know, he makes reference, basically assuming she's a mum, assuming she has children, because she often leaves like dead on time, or maybe a bit early in the afternoon or evening. And I imagine culturally, like, it's more normal to kind of work a bit later and that kind of thing. And she just turns to him, and she sort of like is both a little bit embarrassed that he's kind of asked the question or spotted her behavior, but also is quite kind of protective of the fact that she has every right to go and live her own life. And she just says, no, I just have loads of hobbies. You know, I just love to go and do this or that. And I have these classes, and that's what I commit myself to. And that's why I work, for me to indulge in these other things. And so actually, I think, there's some really good portrayals out there of women just being themselves, and they are knitted into these dramas in some respects, but they maybe don't get as much screen time as some of the other things. And let's face it, that's supply and demand, right? You know, we love the romantic ones, and so we want more of those. And there's nothing wrong with that necessarily.
So, last question before we wrap up. And again, I'm going to thank you so much for your time today. One, are you going to continue watching K-dramas? And what is next on your radar to watch?
And how do you choose your next drama to watch?
I mean, there's no question. I am going to continue watching K-dramas. I'm hooked. The next drama I want to watch is Our Beloved Summer, because I've heard it's good. Even Meenima's reaction, I can tell.
Chaitra, Maushi's telling you about the romance and falling in love with the romance. It's a big incentive
exactly,
for you, right?
Exactly, exactly. Yes. It means it's genuinely good. She's really hard to please. So, yeah, and I've heard it's like lovers to enemies to lovers, which is one of my favorite tropes. So that's definitely going to be the next one.
Chaitra, I'll rewatch it with you.
Yes, okay, tell me when yes,
she just needed an excuse.
And as for how I pick my dramas, I mean, I'll admit, I'm a bit of a, I do judge a book by its cover, because I think that's okay, because like,
I agree. There are a lot of work goes into yes. put into that cover, so
exactly.
Yes.
So like if it's a genuinely good book, then the production quality is good and they've done a good job with the cover. Personally, that's, so that's how I pick up books, and that's how I pick K-drama. That's why I started Vincenzo, because it looked so nice.
It does. It's a very, very sleek made drama. Exactly. I really love the look of Vincenzo.
So, like, the visually, it's really, really gripping. But like the storyline, it's
all over the
place.
There's
like too many holes in their plot that I'd rather they'd have filled up. But I do judge a book by its cover. Same. And with K-dramas, I do the same. And that's why I pick things that look nice. So that's how I pick my K-dramas.
Chaitra, have you read Ursula Le Guin?
No, I haven't.
If you love fantasy books, then please check her out. She was the pioneer of whatever you're reading right now, I'm sure.
Oh, okay. Definitely, I definitely check it out.
Sangeeta can also give you some fantasy drama recommendations. Oh, she also likes a lot of fantasy.
I want, because I want to get into fantasy a bit more.
Start with Legend of the Blue Sea and then she'll send you more.
Yes, after Legend of the Blue Sea, watch Tale of the Ninetale.
Oh yeah, I want to watch that one too. I want to watch that one too. Yeah.
So you watch these two and then I will tell you, depending on what you like about these.
Okay, dear.
Abby, what about you?
So I'm finishing It's Okay. And then Legend of the Blue Sea is next on the list. So I don't think my viewing will be taken over by K-dramas. But I say that because, as I've described, I kind of dip in and out of different genres depending on my mood and stuff, you know, and I don't necessarily binge watch in the same way always. So I do feel like I will use it to kind of, again, plug those gaps when I want what they're giving me, you know, want that kind of textural detail. And because what I think, the reason why, so I like fantasy, I like sci-fi and those things anyway. And I think the artistry of K-dramas, you know, the cinematography that they put into them, the attention to detail, the kind of imagery and the sound quality of them means that they'll do fantasy really well. And so that's kind of why I'm thinking I'll probably dip into them for those, probably more so than I would for other things. That's on the list.
Thank you both for coming, for all the time you've given, for the insights you have shared. It was a wonderful experience for us. Poonam, Sangeeta, you want to add anything?
Yeah, first of all, I'm really, really thankful that you girls because of Meenal Maushi and Meenal's influence, listen to our podcast. It's always wonderful to meet people who have been listening to us, because you are the guys we keep going. There's actually no other incentive to do this other than the fact that we have fun talking about it and there are people who have fun listening to it.
Totally. Thank you so much. And it's been a fun conversation too. Got to learn so much.
I'm so glad.
Thank you for inviting us,
because it is a bit like, you know, the fangirls join the team,
exactly.
You know.
And... exactly. It's like being invited to the cool girls club.
One thing about K-dramas is, no matter how much we already talked about so much about them, when we meet new people and talk something, the same dramas with them, we get to learn something new again. So it's like as if we haven't spoken enough about this.
True.
How come we are listening to this for the first time? So... that's very fascinating.
And I think that's, you know, that for me, I mean this obviously won't necessarily get into the podcast, but you know, I literally knew nothing about Korean dramas listening to your podcast and I still enjoy the podcast, and I enjoy it because it's the passion, right? Anyone being passionate about something is just infectious and enjoyable to listen to. Your conversation, you know, the sort of immediacy of it, just your laughter. I joked with Meenal the other day, but I was being utterly sincere. A few weeks ago, I had to go rip out some wardrobes at my mum's house and it was like a 3-hour task. And I was just like, oh, what can I listen to that's going to kind of keep me company when I'm alone, that's going to kind of keep me upbeat and motivated, that's going to kind of get me lost in something. I was like, obviously it's Crash Landed on K-Dramas, you know, like nothing else is going to cut it.
Oh wow, that's the best thing ever.
But I just pumped it in my ears for like 3 hours and caught up on a load of episodes I've missed, and it kind of kept me company, you know, because it was that kind of the interplay, you know, your friendship comes through, you know, you're joking with each other, but also the guest speakers that you bring in as well, you know, they kind of really add a lot to the conversations along the way. So, you know, I think it's brilliantly done. It's really well structured, and just it's just fun, you know, and it's indulging in something. And there's so much of the world that's so serious that, you know, having a lot more of the kind of entertainment is there, and hearing it from real people. And I bet there are people out there, you know, it's like you say about, oh, it's the fans that keep this podcast going. And in the same way, it's your podcast that keeps the dramas in their own way going, right? Because it's just kind of that demand, that entertainment, wanting to see more of these actors and actresses, you know, that's going to keep fueling it and keep adapting it. And I think you made a great point about adaptations and remakes, where I was probably coming from quite a privileged and entitled position, being like, oh yeah, don't remake them. And I was like, yeah, well, you can read them in English and other people can't, you know. So I think that idea of actually storytelling and the importance of stories is needing to transcend borders, needing to cross over, needing to be reassimilated into different cultures. It's a very important point. And it's about accessibility, isn't it? And having that diversity of storytelling, and it's all part of it. So I think it's you know, for me, I just love it. And I will often, like, if I'm in the car or whatever, like, on goes one of the podcasts, and you know, I just get my little boost. It's like being part of a conversation. I was like, oh yeah, it's quite sweet. So yeah, I love it.
Talking to you has been very insightful, because, you know, we are jaded. We three have watched so many times some of the moments we have watched, noticed, probably glossed up and forgotten about it. You mentioned that relatable moment from Park Cuban from Hot Stove League, that where she likes to go home on time because she has hobbies. It has happened to me. That single discrimination has happened to me. And somebody has actually said to me that, you know what, you are not married and you don't have kids. Why do you need to go home? Or why do you need to go early? Yeah,
life.
Exactly.
I'm
like, oh my God, because I have watched it so long ago, I have actually forgotten it. The same thing happened with Chetra Prabhu, making some points. So I think it's always good to keep talking to people who are watching and in different, and they have a different K-drama journey and experience.
Exactly.
Than ours.
Thank you so much. This has been a great episode. We are on Instagram, Twitter. All our handles are in our episode notes. Get in touch. Give us feedback. Until another episode, I'm you.